Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for January 14th, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack today announced a new round of matching conservation grants. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason demystifies a new term heard in commodity circles, the renewable gap. And meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Here are how futures settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Hard red winter March wheat settled at 575, down 6 3/4. Soft March wheat settled at 537 3/4, down 10 1/4. March corn settled at 381, down 4 3/4. May, 388 1/2, down 5. July, 395, down 5 1/4. December, 408 1/2, down 3 1/2. January soybeans settled at 992 1/2, down 7 1/2. March, 1009 1/4, up 5 1/4. May, 1014 1/2, up 4 1/2. July, 1020, up 4 1/4. November, 991 1/4, up 4 1/2. January soybean meal went off the board at $3.2890, down $20.80. March, $3.3550, up $1.90. January soybean oil, $32.57, up $18. Last trades, February live cattle, 155.32 1/2, down 212 1/2. And February lean hogs, 75.75, up 57 1/2. And those are the settlements.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says a large part of Brazil and central and northern Paraguay will continue to dry down during the coming week. Stress to crops should expand from northeastern Brazil into portions of Goiás, Mato Grosso do Sul, and portions of central and northern Paraguay before a timely increase in shower activity occurs January 21st through the 28th. Northeastern Brazil will be disfavored for significant rain while shower activity increases in other areas. Frequent rounds of showers and thunderstorms will occur in northern Argentina during the next 10 days, and drier weather will be needed soon to improve crop development rates and to ensure flooding does not become a serious concern. Back in the U.S., warming will occur today into this weekend, and temperatures will become warmer than normal in the western Corn Belt Thursday and in the eastern Corn Belt by Saturday. The next organized precipitation to affect the region will occur Monday and the next Wednesday, with most of the precipitation light and northern areas seeing the greatest precipitation. Another weak disturbance will affect parts of the region January 23rd through January 26th. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. The 26th annual All-Day Ag Outlook meeting is sure to attract a crowd. We got Sue Martin presenting a keynote address on commodities, and all of our on-air analysts will forecast corn and soybean futures, cash grain, and answer whatever else is on your mind. And Murray Wise will give us a lowdown on land values. Cost for the March 10th meeting at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, is just $25, and it includes a continental breakfast and Beef House lunch. Get your tickets today by calling this phone number, 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300. Joining us on the phone now to talk about the markets is Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group. She's in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Good afternoon. Let's hope our internet technology is great, but let's hope the internet stays with us this time. Oh my gosh!
Let's begin with the Dow, because it was a roller coaster of a ride with the Dow Jones Industrial Average this morning. We got some news about retail sales being 9/10 of a down in December from November, and that of course the key holiday season. And that set the Dow on down. But then about midday, we begin to get some positive news. We got the Fed's beige book saying the economy continued to expand. And we got the House passing a bill that would ease some regulatory rules on Wall Street. So the end of the day, it doesn't look as ugly as it could have been, but it's still down 262 points.
Oh, that's right. And you know, I think the sales of Depends for all of the traders went up a great deal today, both there and in the livestock market. You know, we have to expect when we're at these lofty levels, you know, of the 17,000, that we're going to see big moves. And actually, if you see a 300-point move at a 17,000, it's a great deal less of a percentage than it would be if we were sitting at 8,000 or lower, let's say, than that. And so it's still scary to investors. They are more tender-footed than they've been in a long, long time, and very concerned about the world economy. I'm glad that we have the crude oil a little bit lower than what it had been, or a lot lower than what it had been, because that at least supports the world economy. But this Dow Jones, you know, it has a trickle effect, Dave, and that is if they stay down today, let's say, and we go down tomorrow, and I actually think that that's kind of what turned the crude oil around, you'll start to see them come over into these other commodity markets where they have any money made or where they have a lot of margin requirement tied up, and just basically start to lift positions is what they'll do. And so we can really get kicked in the socks. It might help beans, you know, after how hard we've been down on beans, but it certainly has an impact on us.
You mentioned lifting of positions, and the funds were bailing in the corn market today.
And yesterday, too. They got out of 20,000 contracts yesterday. I know they were out of about 9,000 earlier in the day today. So, and, you know, we knew that the likelihood was there. Coming into this morning, they were still long 229,000. We could still see liquidation going on for a while if they don't get any more bullish news. We did have some sales to Taiwan today on corn, and actually some sales on unknown on beans. So, you know, those were supportive things. But we'll see once what export sales say tomorrow morning.
We also got a new report from the folks at Farm Economics here at the College of Aces. And they were talking about yield exclusion, that there are particular years where counties can exclude the actual production history. And it is a good read, but it seems the bottom line is that it could impact planting decisions later this year.
Well, I certainly would think that that's going to be very true. You know, I know that before people choose it, they probably should check with Gary Schnitke to find out exactly how it fits, because the Farm Bill is pretty particular about the way that it does certain things. But I think that this would be the one thing that the traders certainly haven't counted on. You know, they've been saying, well, everybody's going to plant more beans because of the ratios and everything else. But I remember when they bumped at 11 bushels, it made a huge difference in how many acres of corn was planted. And so for some guys, you know, you drop out 2012, and that could make a big difference in what their guarantee is, and it certainly could swing more acres back to corn.
Corn also did test some technicals today and actually kind of held, I guess we could say.
Yes, we did. March tested the 100-day moving average, and it did close above it. You know, and I do think, you know, that the sales to Taiwan certainly helped us. And there was some talk today, too, that there's some of the ethanol plants in Minnesota that are actually selling E85 directly to stations, you know, so that's a good thing. You know, the crude corn ratio, which is something that we watch pretty darn close, is down to 12.4 to 1. It was as high as 27 to 1 in September. So that doesn't support the ethanol situation very well. And the RBOB ratio is still below 1. 1 would be like what we consider to be the threshold from a profitability standpoint. So I was glad to see that. Beans continued to trade below the 100-day moving average. Today was last trading day for January. It went off the board 7.5 cents lower. Meal went off the board $20.80 lower. And we're going to have NOPA crush out tomorrow, so that will give us a little more direction as to demand, too. But it's going to be interesting. I think the bigger question in the background, Dave, is when will the buyers actually begin to start to look at South America versus us?
Well, I would think it would be pretty soon because harvest is coming off.
Oh, that's absolutely the truth. I mean, we do know today, you know, we did see some numbers saying that they think maybe the Argentinian crop is going to be a little smaller than what they thought it was going to be. I know that there's some privates out here that are saying that, the Brazilian crop could be a million metric tons smaller than what the guesses were. But we have to keep it in perspective. That's still going to be about 8 million metric tons higher than it was last year. So at some point in time, all of that comes to roost with us. And one of the things that we've seen in Brazil, just like here in the U.S., we have a lot less forward sales on beans than what you would expect in other years. And so, you know, at some point in time, farmers are going to sell.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Dave. Have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group. And she is in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Congressional Research Service has released a long list of reports on issues likely of concern to the new Congress, including a review of the provisions of the new Farm Bill and their compliance with World Trade Organization rules. The CRS review included something of a warning call as well. It says, because the U.S. plays such a prominent role in most international agricultural product markets, any distortion resulting from its policies would be both visible and vulnerable to challenge under WTO rules. Furthermore, it says projected outlays under the new 2014 Farm Bill's shallow loss and countercyclical price support programs may make it difficult for the U.S. to agree to any future reductions in allowable caps on domestic support expenditures and related exclusions as envisioned in ongoing WTO multilateral trade negotiations. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack today announced new projects designed to cut down on fertilizer runoff, expand bird nesting areas, and restore native grasslands, among other conservation projects. The federal agency has approved 115 proposals in an initial round of funding under the Regional Conservation Partnership Program. The projects will share $340 million in federal funds, which will be matched by an estimated $400 million from participating groups. Of the federal money, 40% went to multi-state and national projects. An additional 35% went to projects in critical conservation areas, including the Great Lakes region, and state-level projects received the remaining 25%. The Obama administration says it will issue new regulations to cut down on methane emissions from oil and gas production and processing. The White House says the goal is to cut methane emissions by 40% to 45% by 2025 compared to 2012 levels. The EPA will issue a proposal this summer and then finalize it in 2016. The Interior Department will also update its standards for drilling to reduce leakage from wells on public lands. Russia's finance minister today says that Russia will have to cut budget spending by 10% this year as revenue declines due to Western sanctions and a fall in the price of oil. Russia is widely expected to slide into recession this year while also suffering from double-digit inflation. The economic turbulence is a result of a rapid depreciation in the ruble, steered by sliding oil prices, massive capital flight, and a geopolitical standoff with the West. The U.S. economy continued to expand in late 2014 as hiring and consumer spending increased. But energy-producing regions saw signs of a slowdown due to lower oil prices. That, according to the Federal Reserve's latest survey of regional economic conditions, the Fed found modest or moderate growth across most of its 12 districts, according to the Beige Book report released today. The House voted today to ease the landmark law reining in banks and Wall Street, advancing a key Republican priority more than 6 years after a financial crisis brought on the Great Recession. The vote was 271 to 154. Approval of the bill came swiftly in the second week of the new Congress. The bill alters sections of the 2010 Dodd-Frank financial overhaul. That law had tightened government oversight of banks and financial markets with an eye toward preventing another crisis and taxpayer bailout of banks. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. There is a phrase making its way through the agricultural and energy sectors. It's called the renewable gap. Todd Gleason has more on just what it is and why it might be a boon for the price of soybeans.
The renewable gap is the difference between the maximum amount of corn-based ethanol which can be blended into the U.S. gasoline supply and the amount that's required by law. The amount required by law is more than a maximum amount that can be blended, about 1.5 billion gallons more.
So to fill that renewable gap, obligated parties have to choose one or more of the following alternatives. They have to use from their available stock of RINs credits if they have some. They can incentivize the use of higher blends like E15 or E85, or they can use a non-ethanol biofuel like biodiesel to meet that renewable gap.
The available RINs inventory, I won't bother to explain what these are, is mostly used up. This puts the pressure on the other two options to fulfill the renewable gap of about 1.5 billion gallons. This can be achieved by making higher ethanol blends available for automobiles capable of burning E15 and E85. Those are examples. Or by turning to an alternative renewable fuel source to fill the gap, biodiesel rather than corn-based ethanol. Here's what Irwin thinks will happen.
I do know that expansion of E85, which will require additional pumps to be put in place, that just simply can't happen that fast. We've talked to people in the industry, and they suggest to add additional E85 pumps takes a minimum of 8 to 12 months just to get through all the regulatory red tape, get them built, put them in. So we think that the burden of meeting that renewable gap will more than likely fall on biodiesel.
Interestingly, corn is not cut out of this part of the market, and the other primary row crop in the Midwest is likely to be a big winner, soybeans.
Over half of the ethanol plants in the United States have the capability of extracting corn oil from some point in the production process, and then that generally is going into biodiesel production. So that'll continue to be used. Someplace around half of the feedstock for biodiesel in the U.S. is soybean oil, and that will continue. The rest is largely different kinds of reused cooking oil, and recycled cooking oil and fats and grease.
it'll have to do to fill the renewable gap and more. Unless the statutes are changed, the United States will require some 3 billion gallons, twice the renewable gap, in biodiesel to be used in the nation's fuel supply. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Scott Butcher of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Scott.
Good afternoon.
Well, it's 20 degrees on Friends Plaza here at the University of Illinois. Is that warm enough for people to start moving corn or no?
Well, we're definitely headed in the right direction. I mean, the last week to 10 days, whatever we've had here of just terrible weather has really slowed things down. Haven't seen much movement off the farm, which is, you know, kind of to be expected this time of year. But as things get better next week, you know, you would sure think that things are going to pick up.
What did you make of the quarterly grain stock report?
Well, it was definitely, right where we thought it would be as far as where the numbers came back. I mean, there wasn't really any surprises in there, pretty similar to where things had been before. And the market, I think, is kind of reacted accordingly. Unless there was some sort of, really bullish surprise, things were probably going to trade lower, and that's kind of what's happened.
We have had a break in corn prices and soybean prices on the futures front. When producers call, what are they asking you about?
Well, everybody's kind of concerned about, you know, what's going to happen going forward and, what they should be doing. You know, I think everybody kind of sold some, especially on the corn side, everybody did a little bit of something at around $4 cash. And then after that, things have kind of slowed down. And I think everybody's looking for that next price level, what it would be. Now, obviously, we're below $4 and starting to get a lot of questions about will we make it back to that level and, when that might be.
Well, at this point, would not producers have to be pretty tight holders? Or do you think there's something in South America, corn weather in Brazil, that might help?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, that's kind of what we're really tied to the weather right now, whether it's in South America or our weather here as well. I think that's really about all we've got to really drive this market higher.
Do you think that when you look at the corn-soybean ratio, that corn acres need to be purchased? And do you think that corn will do it? Or do you think that it is more likely a further collapse in soybeans is going to end up doing it?
No, I think that right now it's probably going to be, more of a corn issue than it is beans. At least that's what it feels like to me.
What else are you keeping an eye on as you go about your business there?
Right now we're just focusing on where the next, movement is going to come from. Obviously, everybody's concerned about, if things would slow up here for a month or so, what's it going to take to move corn out of the bin again? And I think that's our biggest issue right now is getting everybody on the same page that, hey, it might be a while before we get back to $4 if things want to continue to slide. But at the same time, you should probably be doing something rather than nothing.
Do you think there will be a basis play in the next 30 to 60 days?
Yeah, it sure feels like it. We've lost, with what we've lost so far in the cash market or the futures market, it's probably going to have to be made up in basis.
Why don't we go ahead and get your prices today, Scott?
Right now for cash corn, we are 373. Soybeans, we are 1001.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's Scott Butcher of the Andersons, and he is over in Clymers, Indiana. I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. It's National Strawberry Ice Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1785, William Prout was born. An English chemist, he was the first to classify food components into three divisions, carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. In 1863, wood pulp paper was first used in the U.S. for a printed newspaper by the Boston Morning Herald of Boston, Massachusetts. It was a four-page, eight-column newspaper that sold for 3 cents a copy. In 1889, a patent was issued to Daniel Johnson of Kansas City for a rotary dining table for use on ships. The table and attached chairs rotated so that everyone could be served from one spot. In 1919, the Great Molasses Flood occurred. A large 50-foot-high storage tank in Boston burst and sent a tidal wave of over 2 million gallons of molasses traveling at over 30 miles per hour across the city. Houses, buildings, and parts of the elevated rail system were crushed in its path. 21 people died, and over 150 were injured. It took over 6 months to clean up the mess, and the damage was in the millions of dollars. And in 1990, Campbell's Soup produced its 20 billionth can of tomato soup. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, meteorologist for World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
So it's been well talked about on our air that a warming trend is coming across corn and soybean country. But the question I have for you is, what portion of the country might lose its snow cover from this warming trend, given that colder temperatures are advertised behind it, and that might impact the wheat crop?
Yeah, it's a good question. And right now, most of the snow that's on the ground is across northern areas anyway. We will probably melt some of that snow. I don't think we're going to lose it all. But we'll lose quite a bit. And then the cold air that's coming up here for later next week is, at the moment, does not look threatening cold in most cases. So I think it won't matter too much whether or not we put the snow back down in the soft wheat areas of the lower Midwest or hard red winter wheat country in the central plains. Both those areas will certainly be snow-free before we face the next cool bout, but I just don't think the temperatures are going to be low enough with this next round of cooling to make much of an issue out of it. There will be an even greater warm-up after that, which will take place maybe at the end of next week or in the following weekend. It will take us into early February, and it's really sometime later in February that we'll start seeing the next round of truly bitter cold air once again, probably later in February into early March. So I don't think we need to worry too much about the snow cover situation, unless, of course, we lose it up there across the northern plains and some of the minor wheat-producing areas up there. And there's a chance we will lose a part of it, but I think it'll be right back as soon as it gets cold.
Let's turn our attention then to South America and Paraguay in particular and ask you, do we have a hiccup there?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a problem there. Actually, from Paraguay all the way back up into parts of northeastern Brazil, it's part of that same blocking pattern that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. Paraguay, the driest areas in Paraguay are actually in central and northern areas of that particular country, and missing out on the most important soybean and corn-producing areas in the south. But there is a little bit of dryness down there as well. But this is all part of that broader region of dryness that occurs all the way across Mato Grosso to Sol, and into portions of Minas Gerais, as well as Goiás and parts of Bahia. And all of that region has another 5 to 7 days to go before we start seeing rain again. And I think at that point we'll see some improvement in these drier biased areas.
Meanwhile, portions of Argentina are too wet?
That's right. Some impressive rains running anywhere from 3 to around 10 inches have occurred over the past week. And the ground is saturated. We've got more rain in the pipeline over the next 5 to 7 days there as well. And so some of that crop is probably not doing all that great, but we are going to see enough sunshine between rain events coming up that the situation probably won't get much worse, and it will probably get a lot better, actually, as we do get some warmer and drier days in there.
Thank you much, Drew.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to call in for your tickets to the All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. You can do that at 217-333-7300. This is Dave Dickey.